Some time ago, my friend Mike called me and said,
Steve, I have a message for you. You have to make a podcast. It's very important. Do it now.
And I said, okay, I will. Can you provide me with extra time to do that during my busy schedule? He said he couldn't do that. But then I managed to free up some time. So here's my podcast, Audio Chimera. This is episode number 15, Radio Days, or a tribute to Velvet Elvis. What you just heard is the sound of the transistor radio my mother gave me many years ago. It's an Omegas 8 Deluxe 8-transistor radio made in Japan around 1963. The case is slightly cracked, its leather-like carrying case has a broken-off handle strap, and I long ago lost the single earphone that plugged into the side of the radio. But as you can hear, it still works. I listened to it for hours when I was a kid. It would serve as background music when I did other things, and more importantly, played me to sleep at night. The earphone would be annoying, so I would position the radio under my pillow and the sound would be conducted into my ear. Maybe it was a little muffled. It was an old-time AM radio, so it was muffled a bit anyway. But the sound of music often lulled me to near sleep. I would turn it off and put it on my nightstand for safety. After that, there never really was a time I was without a radio. Eventually, FM came into wider use, and so we got a radio that pulled in those stations. During this time, I was exposed to the first of the very laid-back FM DJs on
Starview 92, who seem to play whatever they want, man, because it's all about the music.
My colleagues at our college radio station all wanted to go work there because that was the cool station. I must have seemed like a sellout when I started working as a DJ at a local AM station.
1350 WZIX York at 1129 with Steve Shrum coming up this half hour. Music from Robert John, Sad Eyes, ABBA, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Firefall, plus a whole lot more. So keep it tuned right here to WZIX.
Radio waves were always present in the air. We had our portable battery-powered radios and, of course, our car radios. You can actually trace the evolution of broadcasting and audio by what was installed in cars at any given time. First AM radios, then AM/FM, and later 8-track players, cassette players, CD players, and now streaming services. For some reason, and it's probably pretty obvious, cars have never been outfitted with turntables. While you might be able to put a stack of albums on an automatic changer in the trunk, driving around would probably incur a great deal of skipping, especially in a place with a lot of potholes. I do still have a lot of my original albums, and they have traveled with me to the West Coast and back again. While I've listened to a variety of different genres over the years, I've returned full force recently to progressive rock. Clearly, I am no Johnny-come-lately in this realm, as I still have my original releases of Rick Wakeman's Journey to the Center of the Earth and Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Welcome Back, My Friends, to the Show That Never Ends. As I often say, I am a longtime prog fan, and I have the vinyl to prove it. And for a while there, I resisted CDs. I heard from others that the quality was not as good as vinyl. I remember, though, the exact moment when I decided it was worth switching to this newfangled digital technology. Flashback now to my high school years. I became interested in directing movies and bought a Keystone XL film camera. Being new to the whole filmmaking process, I shot a lot of film with a lot of mistakes. And so to put only the good shots together, I learned about editing with a film splicer and tape. Very tedious, very messy, and didn't always yield the best results. When I first got involved in audio, I repeated the same process. You take the two pieces of audio tape that you want to join, and you cut them with, hopefully, a demagnetized razor blade, on a diagonal, by the way, on the small splicing block. Then you line up the edges and use tape on the non-recorded side. This can be a very time-consuming and frustrating process. I was doing this in the audio room at UC Berkeley when designing the sound for a colleague's production of a play called Bloody Poetry, about the lives of Lord Byron, Percy and Mary Shelley, and others in their circle. But before I get to my epiphany about digital audio, there's a story I often tell about this production when I teach about using sound in the theater. Bloody Poetry takes place in a seaside location, and as sound designer, I wanted to establish this immediately by playing the sound of ocean waves as the audience entered the theater space. But I didn't want to buy a CD of ocean waves and looked to people I knew as possible sources to borrow from. First, I went to the production manager of the campus theater and asked, "Do you have a CD of wave sounds?"
"Yes."
"May I borrow it?"
"Well,"
she replied,
"you may not want to use it. It contains subliminal relaxation messages in it."
"Okay." Then I went to a male friend of mine and asked, "Do you have a CD of wave sounds?"
"Yes."
"May I borrow it?"
"Well,"
he replied,
"you may not want to use it. It contains subliminal seduction messages in it."
Then I thought, what if I used both and interwove parts from each? The audience members would come in, sit down, be listening, sort of, to these background sounds, and then start yawning for no apparent reason. And then a moment later, they'd perk up and be very excited to be at the theater. And this would continue as they waited for the show. Alas, I did not do this, but always wondered if the subliminal messages would have worked, or if this was all just a bunch of crap. So now back to my moment of discovery about the coolness of digital technology. I had a CD of music for the show that someone had lent me. I listened to the track and decided I needed to start it approximately 20 seconds in. But look, on the display, I can start it exactly at 20 seconds. The digital readout tells me where that is. And I can pause and then begin playing right there. At that, I realized digital technology may be very useful to my work. And of course, not just in audio, but also in teaching. Later on, I used HyperCard, a card-based authoring system on the Macintosh, and eventually PowerPoint and other digital applications. And now I'm making films with non-destructive editing programs like Final Cut and Premiere. Non-destructive means no physical cutting. And let's not forget GarageBand, digital audio, and podcasts. Things have come a long way since the razor blade and tape days, and from the days of AM radio. Currently, vinyl appears to be making a comeback. Apparently, the old saying, "What goes around, comes around," yes, pun intended, applies to this resurgence of records. I also understand that some music interest groups even swap music around on cassettes these days. Apparently, many people enjoy streaming, but I'm wary of a service that wants me to be tethered to either Wi-Fi or phone service, because in some places that just doesn't work. Streaming does appear to be here to stay for the moment, however, until cell service is interrupted by the zombie apocalypse. But something tells me there is likely to be no return, or even a desire to return to the dreaded 8-track tape, so often seen smashed on the side of the road, its entrails of magnetic tape oozing onto the pavement. A prime example of technological roadkill, a pre-digital afterthought, seen only in the rearview mirror of our memories. Anything you want to hear more about from this podcast? I can elaborate. Just send your request to Stephen Schrum at museoffire.com. That's StephenSchrum at museoffire, MUSOFYR.com. Or leave a message at 724-835-4074, and I'll see what I can do. I receive no cash for products I mentioned, but please feel free to throw money at me to advertise here. For more information on my works, check out my website, musifier.com. For written works, search for me on Smashwords as Stephen Schramm or Musifier, or find me on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. This is Stephen Schramm. Thanks for listening to Audio Chimera.